It starts from being able to not just take a history from them, but be able to truly hear their perspective, to be able to see the struggles that they are dealing with and the conversations that you are having.
Welcome to the Sawyer Vet Now What, the podcast. This is a show that serves as your audio mentor in your journey as a veterinarian. And each week, our awesome host, Dr. Mariah McCauley, will be bringing you insightful short-form interviews with happy, successful vets who are eager to share their career and clinical tips to make your life easier. So whether you're a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your trusted companion on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Over to you, Mo.
Welcome back to So You're a Vet, Now What? I am your host, Dr. Mariah McCauley. Today on the podcast, I nerd out about the topic of clinical empathy with Dr. Josh Rosen. Josh is an influential voice on social media whose passion lies in learning about and sharing the value of clinical empathy in practice. In this episode, we cover what it is and why it's so integral to your success as a medical professional. If this is the first time you're hearing about clinical empathy or just aren't sure where to start, Josh and I cover some examples about how you can use this in daily practice. Of course, we barely scratched the surface on this episode, so if you want to learn more, I'd encourage you to follow Josh on Instagram and TikTok, where he shares tips on how and why to use it in practice. Okay, before we start this episode, I just want to say how excited I am to see the So You're a Vet community growing as we have listeners from all over the world. So do me a favor, if you are listening on Spotify or Apple Music, leave us a comment about where you're listening from. Alternatively, you can tag us on Instagram so we can see just how far this episode has gone. I think it'll be pretty cool. All right. Well, with that, let's jump into today's episode. All right. Well, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Mariah. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I am jazzed. As we've been kind of talking over this topic before we hit record, I kind of said that we would both be nerding out on this. And I think that statement is so close to the truth, because like, we both love clinical empathy. We love what it stands for, what it does for veterinary medicine. But before I just start rambling on, Josh, like, why don't you tell us, like, what was it in your personal story that piqued your interest or brought this idea of clinical empathy forward for you?
Awesome question. I spent the past few years working as a medical director for two different veterinary companies. And through my time working with different associates, different colleagues, I noticed different challenges that existed in regards to client communication, and challenges that I didn't necessarily know the answer for at the time, but definitely led to the idea that something was different. Something in the exam room was going on differently between myself, my colleagues, their colleagues. And, you know, eventually I kind of started tapping into this idea of whether or not empathy was part of the conversation that led to larger confidence in treatment plans, owners providing more compliance towards your recommendations. It was a difference that led to me eventually listening to someone out there about clinical empathy, and it just started this vortex of a rabbit hole of information that I really just went from study to study, starting in veterinary medicine and then quickly realizing that there was so much more to learn even in human medicine and how we communicate with our clients and their situation. They're obviously communicating with their patients, but the idea of being able to put yourself in their shoes and really be able to meet them where they're at in regards to treatment, I just feel that you get so many more pet parents on your team in regards to those situations.
That is so cool to hear those kind of stories, because like, I know everyone has experienced that where your friend or your colleague, you're like, how did you get them to say yes to that estimate or to that treatment plan? Like, what's the magic voodoo that you're doing in that consult room? And a lot of it comes down to the communication that they're using, the verbal and nonverbal communication that is the umbrella term of clinical empathy. And I wish we talked more about this in our first and second years of vet school, which, as we were talking about earlier, it's kind of hard to get first and second year vet students to, in a way, care about these things. But that is the time to really start practicing these skills, because when you graduate and you're suddenly just dumped into the world of veterinary medicine, like those are the skills that are kind of make it or break it for both you and your clients and your patients within those first couple years. And as much as I want to say like mentorship is one of the big reasons that the new grads will leave their first job, I think a lack of job satisfaction and how they're doing with their clients is a huge, huge part of it as well. Like if they're not connecting with their clients or they feel like they're just constantly batting heads, they're also going to want to leave their first job. So I'm excited to talk about clinical empathy. So as you've done all of these studies, like, and there's so many different ways to define it, what has been the most cohesive definition that you have found of what clinical empathy is?
I think that's a really great question. And honestly, it starts from being able to not just take a history from them, but be able to truly hear their perspective, to be able to see the struggles that they are dealing with and the conversations that you are having. The second step, for lack of a better term, would be to then hear those pain points, hear what they are struggling with in regards to their visit, and be able to craft communication that is very much involving exactly what they are concerned about. And it's to say, it's not always going to line up with what your priority concern is, but we're not at the point of making medical recommendations yet. We're just trying to build that bridge so that we know that we're both on the same team for better care with our patients. And that third step is basically putting it all together to then say, okay, now I'm going to make an action plan. I'm going to talk us through as a team what we're going to do for our patient, including both what you or the pet parent, you know, cares about, as well as you as the veterinarian care about in that situation medically. Often that can lead to a spectrum of care approach. It also can lead to an approach that leads to the gold standard care that, you know, we're taught in vet school as well. You know, I think that being able to go through again, being able to identify pain points and then provide reflective listening, once again, being able to put that all together to make action steps based on those factors.
No, I think those are so many different layers, and I'm excited to jump into those. Which one of those things that I noticed you were doing, like, is already a form or a part of clinical empathy, is being able to kind of diffuse situations, or at least, what's the word I'm looking for? But basically, like, as I was asking a question, you're like, oh, that's a really good question. But it kind of confirms, like, oh, okay, the question I'm asking isn't stupid. It's a good question. Like, and that is something that I do with my clients as well. So when you were doing it even here, I'm like, yeah, there you are. So no, I think that's a really good thing. And that's why I wanted to point it out.
You also train yourself. Oh, sorry.
Exactly. Like, it becomes second nature. So you don't even realize when it spills over into other communication, conversations. But one of those definitions I always come across when they talk about empathy is like the ability to try and experience what the client is experiencing and kind of sit with them in whatever emotion that is. One thing that I want to kind of spend a little bit of time on is, because we're going to talk heavily about how do we like sit in that with those clients and like try to understand what they're experiencing, is how do we also protect ourselves? Because there is a level of, if you try and fully experience the kind of grief or the anger or everything that they're experiencing, like, you cannot as a human take on all of that. Because like every 20, 30 minutes, you're doing that over and over and over again. And that's how you burn out. So let's just take like a couple seconds to kind of cover that little side of it, and then we can kind of move on. But how would you say, for people that are hearing this and they're like, clinical empathy, am I going to have to really sit with the anger and the grief and all the frustration that these clients are doing? Like, I can't do that, Josh. Like, what would you say to them?
Again, I think that this is probably the pivotal controversy that exists within clinical empathy. You know, part of being able to utilize the skill means that you are also going to prioritize yourself. And that however much energy you want to be putting forward to provide your patients with the best care, is that it starts with caring about yourself first. And I definitely hear this. I hear it when I'm reading about it, thinking about, oh, well, yeah, like, how am I going to spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes with every single client that I see during a day when you're seeing 15, 20, 25, sometimes even people see 30 patients a day. I think that that is a very valid feeling that comes about. And it really does stem from the idea of being able to create a plan that gives you the energy to do that. And part of this is also just being able to identify boundaries that are appropriate and being able to keep your eye on the clock and other little tiny fixtures that do create a safety net for you. But in reality, I do believe passionately that it really comes down to being able to provide that self-empathy for yourself. And that's a little bit of a oxymoron, but it's to say, you know, you have to care about yourself in order to care about your patients in the way that you want them to receive that care.
No, I totally hear that. And I think I would add on to that, that it is okay for you to not have to like take on all of the emotions that your clients are going to be bringing with you. And one of the, and it's kind of a great segue, is because with clinical empathy, one of the important things is to not necessarily take on that emotion yourself, but to be able to name it for the client, because then it can help them process the emotion better. And for them to say, oh, this doctor is able to recognize the feeling that I'm experiencing.
Yes.
And that is a huge, huge part. So I think that's kind of like that segue of being like, okay, yes, you hear the word empathy. No, it does not mean that you are going to be emotionally burdened. But what it does mean is that you are going to be able to verbalize and recognize. And this is that like that whole other thing on like emotional intelligence for yes. you as an individual. But like you are going to be able to identify one, what's the emotion that I'm experiencing in this situation? And then two, what is the emotion that the client is experiencing? How am I going to label that for them? And say things like, I know this is everything I've just told you, like, it sounds really scary. Like, how are you doing with the information I've just given you? Like, those are the kinds of things that we're going to talk about here.
Are you a new or recent veterinary graduate? If so, listen up. My course, Sawyer Vet Now What, has been put together specifically for you. We focus on the non-clinical skills. Don't tune out. This is not as dull as it sounds, I promise you. In fact, almost every career problem that people face are due to not having well-developed non-clinical skills. The skills that I'm talking about are things like client communication, so you have great relationships with clients, emotional intelligence, so you've got great relationships with your teammates, effective negotiation skills, so you can get paid what you are worth, management of imposter syndrome, and how to build formidable resilience. They're not just skills, they are prerequisites vital for success in financial and emotional well-being. This course serves as an essential stepping stone to your success. So let's take the leap together. I will be your mentor as we go through 12 modules helping you transition from being a student to being a fully rounded professional. Head to www.drdavenichol.com/syav-class to learn more. Now back to the show.
So we've talked about kind of like what clinical empathy is. It's this ability to recognize emotions, kind of connect with our clients and be with them in that moment of what's going on and tell them that we're on the same team. Like that is kind of the core of it. We're there to talk about the human-animal bond, here to like be a voice for them. But why do we care about clinical empathy? Like what are the benefits to you and me as doctors? What are the benefits to our clients, to our staff members?
I love talking about the benefits of clinical empathy because there are so many to talk about. When it comes to us as the doctors, when it comes to us as our veterinary medical teams, the studies that go over clinical empathy, they talk about this idea of better workplace satisfaction, better job satisfaction. And that I wholeheartedly believe comes from the fact that you see the benefits for your patient right in front of you. You can see that there is improved care for that patient versus a situation where we didn't empathize with the client in whatever way, shape, or form because we're really busy that day and we barely had any time to get in the exam room and get out and get all of our charts done. There's a community almost in having a team that enacts this all together. Everybody wants to come to work to be able to provide the best care for their patients. And then also studies show that we see improved patient outcomes. We see improved patient care. And you know, part of it, I truly believe, comes from the idea that you are putting yourself in their perspective. You are providing the care that you would exactly want to receive if you were in that client's shoes.
I think that's huge. Oh, my goodness. I was reading a recent article as well that kind of covered all of those things, and they broke it down just like you did with like the client and patient and the team as itself. And like you said, that the actual satisfaction within our jobs increases dramatically when we start to implement clinical empathy. And part of that is because of the positive reflections that we get from our clients. Like, our clients are happier, so they are have better compliance with their right. care, which means the patient does better. And that makes a doctor very happy when things go well and patients get better. But it also means that there are fewer complaints. It talks about like malpractice complaints.
Absolutely.
Which, yes. But even on the day-to-day of like a client being like they just don't complain about cost near as much because they understand the value of what you're prescribing for them. They don't complain near as much about the care that they receive because, again, they feel like they're on the same team. And then on the doctor and staff side of it, like, yes, there's a satisfaction with the job, but they have improved well-being. And then they also, just the overall health of a person improves when they're able to take care of their emotional and mental health as well. So absolutely. I think those are huge, huge things to talk about. And honestly, we could probably keep on going with a list of like, why should we care about clinical empathy? Quite honestly, I don't see any downsides to implementing clinical empathy.
Absolutely.
So I guess that kind of takes us into the last little bit of us saying, okay, we know what it is. We know why we should care about it. But Josh, I have no idea how the heck am I supposed to use clinical empathy in a day-to-day basis? Like, I don't even know where to start. So if you are talking to some new grads who've just heard the word clinical empathy for the first time, like, what are you going to tell them to do? How should they use it? Like, given, I guess we'll talk about an example that might be the easiest.
Yeah. I mean, I think that something that I really like to talk about is just the idea that everyone really likes to hear their own name. Right, Mariah? It's, you know, there's a innate sense of feeling happy when you hear your own name, and being able to know that you can go into an exam room, introduce yourself, learn the client's name, you're now creating a relationship that is way more significant than, say, if you were to just walk in the room and just go right to the exam. By being able to have them say your name back and you say theirs, they are going to pay more attention to you. If you're able to say it multiple times during the visit, they're going to, you know, reconnect back with you. Maybe we were talking about a complex topic, you know, being able to say the patient's name, it not only makes the client feel like they are a part of this team, which they are, it allows you to actually individualize that patient, that client, and be able to form a relationship subconsciously that's going to make you care more about that situation than another, you know, fast-moving assembly line style of medicine, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Being able to go in and have that conversation where you are getting to know the individual while also paying attention to the clock, it basically, it allows you to really connect with that client on a level that creates pain points present for you to identify. Another situation is to say, an example would be, say a client comes in and they are complaining that their dog had diarrhea last night and they were up several times throughout the night. The dog had 7 episodes of diarrhea. Medically speaking, you're going to start initially, you know, thinking about differentials, what your game plan is for that patient. My ask is that you pause and you say, wow, that sucks. I'm really sorry that you had to deal with that last night. Here are some options for us to help make Bella feel better, you know, and even in that line of a conversation, it might feel a little bit out of nature to talk about treatments before you even talk about your diagnostic workup, but being able to provide reassurance to that client that you're going to help their pet feel better and that that is your priority, now you've gained their trust and you can talk about what you want to do. How important is it that we find an answer for this problem right now? Is it a senior pet? Is it a puppy? You know, what do we think the differentials are? Having that conversation, but being able to empathize first prior to making those medical recommendations will go so far. And then the other aspect to just being a new grad and having these conversations is give yourself a break. You know, this is something that comes with time, and leaning into perfectionism in something that is so complex will be a very difficult thing moving forward. It will lead to a bit of fatigue, maybe even burnout. Being able to say, this is one thing that I want to do today with this many clients, that's a good first step. Once you get that habit down, say, okay, I'm really good at now greeting my clients by their first name every time they come in, or I see a new client and, or I walk in and I remember them because I know them from last time we had a conversation about how their daughter was going to college. That will create relationships that provide the trust that you're looking for in getting that client compliance for that pet, better patient care. That was a little all over the place. I apologize.
No, those are great. I can kind of help simplify it a little bit. So like the main things is like say your client's name and use it often in the appointment. Because again, it helps draw their attention in if they're kind of like all over the place, but it also develops that relationship with them. So like using their name when they first come in, I guess like one of my own awkward things is like I've seen some of these clients for so long and I'm terrible about remembering to use their first name. So now it feels a little bit awkward of trying to be like, wait a minute, what's your first name? Even though it's on the record, like you don't know if that they go by their full name or their partial name. So that's my own little side story. Here I am side trailing as well. But use your client's name in the room, but then also kind of like recognize the frustrations that they're having and kind of saying like, what are your goals? What are your expectations? Or like with the diarrhea, like saying that sucks. Like I'm sure you guys are probably sleep deprived right now.
Right.
Yeah. If the client hears that, they're going to be like, thank goodness this doctor understands why I'm like, what's going on and what
why I'm
my,
here.
What the most frustrating thing is and the thing that I want fixed. Like, yes, I want my dog to not have diarrhea, but I want to sleep tonight. So one of the things you can say, like you kind of mentioned, is like saying, let's figure out what's going on with Bella and let's figure out a way so that everybody can sleep well tonight.
Yep.
And that alone, I find makes some people giggle a little bit. But at the same time, a lot of them are like, yes, thankfully, finally, someone who gets it. So doing those, so like say the name, recognize what the main complaint is that they're coming in for, but then also just like, again, trying to provide the options that they have. So that spectrum of care that's there. So I think those are some great main ideas to start with, especially if you're a new grad or even if you're like myself, 5 years out and you're just starting to use clinical empathy. But within that scope, what are some ways that we can go a little bit step further? Like, what are some ways that we can coach our support staff to use clinical empathy, like our CSRs or our veterinary assistants or technicians?
I think that it's so important to think about this because we are in a situation where you can't do everything all at once every day, right? You have to have a team that is all together on the same message. And to be honest with you, I believe passionately that it starts with just making the change for yourself and being the leader on the treatment floor, in the exam room, that your team sees you in action utilizing these skills. They will, by that nature alone, be motivated to do the same thing. And being able to stay persistent and recognize how much you are influencing others and the actions that you take, being very mindful of the things that you say when doors are closed, you know, it definitely, being able to create that positive workplace environment to motivate others to do the same thing that you're doing will definitely lead to more utilization of clinical empathy. How to have conversations about, you know, clinical empathy. I honestly think it's through team meetings and being able to create scenarios like, you know, getting a fishbowl and putting a whole bunch of scenarios in a fishbowl and going around and having everybody pick out a different scenario to be able to act out. You know, I think that it's tough to make, you know, clinic meetings a regular thing, but if you're able to do 10 minutes of that at the beginning, it'll serve as an icebreaker for you and you'll be able to move right into whatever you know, are prioritizing for that meeting. But at the very least, you're also working on something that is very, very important as well.
That gave me a really good idea for our next team meeting. I think I'm going to try that one. Because again, like we are always trying to find ways, like maybe you have a monthly staff meeting, or even if you guys have rounds on a daily, sometimes maybe doing that once a week on a day that is a little bit lighter is a great opportunity to practice your clinical empathy skills. So I love, love, love every single example you've given. And honestly, I know we could talk about this for absolute hours. Because again, because like if you guys end up looking into clinical empathy like Josh and I have, you will get sucked into a vortex or into a black hole of oblivion of clinical empathy, and you may never find your way out. But it's a wonderful, wonderful black hole to be involved in, I will
say. Wonderful place to be.
So I don't even know where I was going with that, but like you'll find that there's a lot of stuff that you can look into. So like we could talk for hours about this, but hopefully this was just like scratching the surface for you guys that will encourage you to look into it further, to find ways to implement it in your day-to-day in practice, but then also encourage your teammates to do so as well. So Josh, I do want to say thank you so much for coming on the show and kind of talking about clinical empathy. But I guess I want to give you a couple seconds here, or minutes here, to talk about like, where are you talking about clinical empathy? If people want to follow up with you and like learn more from you, like where are you sharing about clinical empathy?
Thanks. I appreciate it. And I really appreciate you having me. This has been an awesome conversation and definitely look forward to future conversations as well. You can find me on Instagram and on TikTok. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. Josh, TikTok as well. That's DoGTorJosh. I definitely love talking about clinical empathy. I love talking about how we can incorporate it in clinical practice, in our models that we have at different types of practices. Let's continue the conversation.
Absolutely. So I encourage you guys, go and follow him on Instagram and TikTok. Like, he's talking about it so, so much, diving into it deeper than we ever could just here alone. But hopefully this is just the start of the conversation surrounding clinical empathy. But until next week, guys, see ya.
So that's it for another show. Thank you so much to Dr. Mariah and her guests for today's tips. And if you're interested in learning more about what we do to support early stage vets in their careers, then check out my book, Sawyer Vet Now What, or Non-Clinical Skills Training Class of the same name. Until next time, take care.